Atheist Nomads episode 440, The Huguenots.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin, and joining me is Lauren.
Hello.
So this week we're going to talk a little bit more about the upcoming rebranding and also about the French Huguenots.
More like Huguenots. I've been waiting so long to say that.
Yeah.
I'm out.
So more on the rebranding is that this is something I have been thinking about doing for...
What, 6 years?
About five.
Okay.
About 5 years. The podcast has been going on for more than 9.5.
So it's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. The name seemed cool, and it fit with the blog that I was doing, which fit with the online handle I was doing, since I was trying to do the blog pseudo-anonymously.
Yeah.
Until my last name was released on it as a guest on Chariots of Iron. Right. And then, oh, all right, that's out. So,
and it's a good homage to your own wandering journey through religion.
And also, you know, the number of change of addresses I filed and... this summer I spent traveling around Jordan and Mexico and wandering around the Northwest. Well, I guess actually couch Michigan surfing. And then couch surfing in the Northwest. Yeah. But it very much feels like a name. To me, it feels like a name for me in my 20s. And I was 28 when the podcast started.
Oh, you outgrew it immediately.
I'm 37 now.
It's like getting a new apartment and thinking, yeah, sure, a twin bed will totally work.
And
2 weeks later, you got yourself another bed.
Yeah.
Or sleeping on the floor.
And so humanist take on the world, I think it feels more mature, more grown up. Okay, in 5 years, I might be like, oh man, that was a stupid name I came up with in my 30s. But
fair.
I think it's one that will... feel like a good fit well into my 40s.
Humanism is for old fogies, after all.
Well, there's that angle of... It has always been associated with people with grayer white hair. And when I've been thinking recently about the things that are wrong in the world...
Those dang kids?
There's...
Are there dang kids on your lawn, Dustin? Do you need to talk about it?
No. Big picture, it's the resurgence of fascism around the world, the resurgence of white supremacy and Christian nationalism, the effects of Pentecostalism across the developing world, prosperity gospel in particular, the... very much reheating of the Cold War, and a judicial system that has been thoroughly packed by the Trump administration and is eroding what has been considered basic human rights, including the definition of what even a human is.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all super depressing. So you're going to lead with an upper?
That's all super depressing. Oh, and add to it, we will soon have a child going to school in Idaho.
Yeah, fuck that noise.
So we're going to have... That will produce material. Okay. The upper on it is, as we discussed in November... You know, we can't keep looking at all the depressing news and talking about all the depressing news. That's not healthy, and it's not sustainable. I want to look at... Yeah, I do want to cover some of the scary, and with the hopes that understanding it can help make it a little less scary. I want to look at the positive on what can we do to make the world a better place. And also look at some of the positive on what can we do to do our part.
Yeah.
Not to change the world, but to feel better about ourselves.
Change our lives for the better.
Yeah. I want to take it more those directions. The style will be a mix of explainer episodes where I'll be researching it out and then explaining the concept and topic. There will be more opinion and discussion episodes where there will still be research involved into the topics, but it will be a lot more flexible. There will be interviews that will, as much as possible, be tied to the above. And when there's something big that happens in the news, there will definitely be commentary about it. The show will be every other week to give me more time to research and prepare higher quality material. And I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. A lot of good changes that you've been thinking about for a long time. And I think everybody will still enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, not much is going to change except for, you know, basically not doing the depressing news every week.
And broadening the topics a bit.
You're broad.
Like from the plan from November, each episode will still be single topic. So if it's a topic you're not particularly interested in, you can always skip. That will be an option.
Or pay us money and then give us feedback. we'll do some themed episodes based on that.
And for patrons who missed the email and the patron announcement, Patreon will be, I'll be changing that to monthly as opposed to per episode. And also at some point opening up a yearly option.
Nice.
Yeah. And then as far as the other changes go, if you're subscribed to the podcast, that will automatically update in your podcatcher.
Podcatcher of choice.
And if you go to the Atheist Nomads website, I will be getting it set up to redirect to the new website.
Yay, new websites are fun.
Which is For Humanist Take on the World. It's abbreviated to HTOTW.com.
Yeah.
And if you actually spell out the whole thing, that'll redirect to
Atatwa.
Actually to the shorter form. So
humanisttakeontheworld.com.
Yep.
Also redirect. Okay.
Yep. And so the redirects will be all set up and work. And
I've been designing t-shirts.
Uh-huh. We'll have new t-shirts for
new logo
at launch. And for the, yeah, places like Patreon and Twitter and Discord and YouTube and sure there's more that I will get to. I'll be updating all those as well in that switch over time. So it should be pretty smooth and should just be all of a sudden you'll be looking and different show with Humanist Take on the World. And it will be starting over the numbering too.
Yeah, you shouldn't notice anything except for Dustin constantly talking about it. Because he's excited. We're both excited.
So this should be pretty good. And
everybody's excited.
Hopefully you all hang in there with that. We did get some feedback about it, and since Lauren's got a headache getting worse, we'll get to that first.
Oh, thank you. I twinged my neck early this morning, and it's apparently leading to a migraine, so I need to get that under control.
All right. So, and right before that, I do have one follow-up on yesterday's episode, or last week's. I do have one follow-up on last week's episode about Puritans leading to the Unitarians with a bunch of atheists and other random people.
Yeah.
It actually really does make sense when you consider they went from Calvinism, which is like hardcore Calvinism, which is God chooses who goes to heaven and who goes to hell. And because you are saved by grace, you have no say in the matter because that would be works. And it's just salvation by grace only. Therefore, nothing you can do can affect that. And so then it loosened up to, maybe people could be converted, as opposed to just if you aren't born into that group, you're going to hell. And then it loosened up a little bit more to, well, if God's a loving God, then obviously...
Yeah, that's where they're wrong.
Then obviously everybody could get to heaven. So yeah, they just have to go through hell as purgatory and then go to heaven. And then that basic premise then expanded to, nope, God loves everybody. You can't do anything to be saved, therefore you can't do anything to be lost either. And then everybody goes to heaven. And you start getting more into the universalist form. And once you get to that point, it's not much of a leap to, well, okay, it's not the Trinity, it's just a single God. And then eventually get to, none of that matters anyway.
Yeah.
Like, that's really just like the next leap. Like, I actually personally went through some of that transition as I was becoming less and less of a Christian and then dropped out of the seminary and went weird, you could almost say universalist deist something weird. And then it was eventually I reached the point of, yeah, if there is a God like that, then that's not a worthwhile God to do anything with. And then I was done and an atheist. And I basically went through
you basically
all
just,
of that myself.
You basically just wrapped up last week's episode.
Yeah. Which was, yeah. Okay. Anyway, pretty cool stuff. All right. So for the feedback from Noel via email about Jonathan Edwards' famous sermon. Hi and happy new year. I love your podcast and I'm always learning details about religions from your Dustin Off the Degree segments. I especially enjoyed this week's episode about the Puritans. I learned details I wish I'd known earlier. I'm a retired public high school English teacher. In 11th grade, we always did a unit on the colonial and Puritan period and always included the Crucible and Jonathan Edwards, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God.
Okay.
So when you both agreed the sermon would not be taught, especially in public school, I had to jump in and let you know that it is. We also taught Emerson, Thoreau, and Transcendentalism. All of that is included in the most widely used literature books. Perhaps I should be that proud of my school system in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, well, one, you should be. Two, I'm completely biased because my entire high school, I was on the AP track, and the AP track wasn't about literature so much as how good of an essayist are you.
Mm.
So I didn't read books that the other kids read. I do remember The Crucible being mentioned. I don't remember the other one, but that's just because I was out of the loop on a typical high school, you know, regiment. And I didn't read half the stuff I was supposed to anyway, because I was in high school and I'm not reading Moby Dick.
Yeah.
Marler. I'm sorry. Too bad. But yes, you should be proud also because you are a teacher and that's something to be proud of.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's... I went ahead and assumed that it must have been because I went to a Christian school, but that literature class was probably a basic, just standard literature class.
Probably.
And while I was going to a Christian, you know, Adventist boarding school, it was in the state of Oregon where all schools in the state must follow the state curriculum.
Oh, so that wouldn't matter.
It doesn't.
Theoretically, it doesn't matter.
And you also have to do testing to make sure that you're actually teaching kids. And
in fact, I think they even did the Crucible play at some point in my high school. Totally skipped out on that.
All right. And we also got one from Beatrice. Also via the contact form on the website. And the subject was, you are rebranding. Neat. And what she wrote was, I saw an email stating that you were rebranding to Humanist Take on the World. I'm excited about this as I've been a humanist for, I think, about 8 years, probably more. I pay annual membership to AHA, that's American Humanist Association. And because of one of your shows promoted it, I donated to FFRF and the Foundation Beyond Belief as well. Will you be redesigning your website as part of the rebranding? I myself have been moving beyond the initial hurt, anger at being rejected from certain, not all family members, and feeling isolated. I've been slowing building community, but with COVID that has been difficult. Your show has helped, but I do feel the need to move forward in a positive manner. One more thing, I'm not far from Tacoma and hope to make it over the Cascade Mountain Range and visit sometime in the spring. Meanwhile, I look forward to your rebranded show.
All right. Well, I look forward to having you visit if you do come this way.
Yeah. We'll see how COVID goes and expect it to be worse here than where you are, because here people don't think it's happening.
Idaho.
But yeah, that's kind of the track that people go on is, you know, want to be all, I'm a edgy atheist, and then, you know, what more is there?
Yeah.
It's an important transition.
What happens when you move beyond the step of you having to defend yourself? Because that's what it really comes. The edgy atheist is just an atheist who's so new to it that they're constantly having to defend their position. And that can come off as, you know, being toxic. It's not.
Yeah.
It's just the natural flow of things. And we've moved to the point now where it's like, well, how do we make our community and our lives better as a result? So, the show will reflect that.
It'll be, And I'm glad you're looking forward to this change and that you are supporting American Humanist Association and FFRF and Foundation Beyond Belief. Those are all awesome.
That's awesome.
Organizations. That's a shame. Yes, I will be redesigning the website. By redesigning, it'll be it's a different theme.
He's not letting me touch it. So if it was up to me, it'd be like a completely different, like total revamp, color and style and all that. Nope. It's just gonna be grayish.
No. We're still finalizing colors.
Yes, that's true. Gold or blue? Gold or blue? Gold and blue. I don't know.
And that sucks about you losing some family members. And yes, COVID has definitely been isolating.
Yeah, you can't just go out to the bars and hang out with your fellow atheist group. But, you know, there's lots of online opportunities and sounds like you're doing everything you need to do. So that's good.
Yeah. And that's it for... Oh, and we have a new patron. Or a returning patron, Sally.
Oh, thank you, Sally. That's so nice to see somebody returning.
And now Lauren is going to go collapse into a dark hole.
Yeah. I might nibble on some chocolate.
And now for the French Huguenots. So what is a Huguenot? If you look at the etymology, it is uncertain, as a lot of things from the 16th century are. And it is clear that it started out as a derisive term that ended up being adopted by a group of people. And it was probably a combination of referring to the Swiss politician Besconon Huguès, who died in 1532, and issues around the religious conflict in the Swiss Republican movement in that time period, also possibly bringing in elements of the Dutch word Huguenotten, which means housemates, possibly even being related to the German Eidgenosse, which means confederate. What all of these have in common is references to the Republican movement of the Swiss Confederacy. And for that to be applied to a group of French people is weird. Especially considering the person in, well, what would become a part of the Swiss Confederation was Geneva, where John Calvin, who was French, fled to avoid persecution for becoming a Protestant. So why they went with the name of a Catholic from Geneva as opposed to an actual French Protestant in Geneva to describe French Protestants seems weird, but it's what happened. And so Huguenot it became. The Huguenots themselves were a not particularly organized Protestant movement, similar to the Congregationalists of England, but predating them by several decades. And it spread rapidly. Considering France is right next door to Germany, it did not take long for Protestantism to spread from Germany into France. It started spreading at the University of Paris, where John Calvin was studying. So that all makes sense. And from there, it seems to have simultaneously spread through the upper echelons and the poor peasants, specifically in the south and west of France. Among the peasants, it appears that it was probably more of a purely religious movement. Among the nobility, it's pretty clear that it was a predominantly political movement. And the French Huguenots became simultaneously anti-Pope and anti-Guy dynasty in France. The track on that probably went along the likes of, an Italian prince should not be dictating how religion is practiced in France. That part is known. And it's not much of a leap to go from that to, and the French king who is letting that happen should not be king of France. So, pretty early on in the, you know, still in the 16th century, Huguenots begin to act on their disdain for the regime and the church, and started killing priests, burning churches, burning altars, destroying artwork, raiding monasteries, like pretty thoroughly actively attacking the local Catholic Church. So King Francis I, who reigned from 1515 to 1547, had persecuted the Waldensian movement in southeastern France, who were not Protestant. They predated the Protestant Reformation by about 400 years. But their descendants in the 17th century would become Protestants. He persecuted them pretty heavily in his early years, and by the time the Huguenot movement started growing, he actually protected them from the Parliament, which wanted to exterminate them. Then, after the 1534 affair of the placards, in which Huguenots posted anti-Catholic posters in public places around Paris and four major provincial cities, and they also got into King Francis's bedchamber door, like actually put a poster on the door to his bedroom in the palace. That left him shaken, and they lost his sympathy. So after that, yeah, he didn't protect them anymore. Over the late 1550s, most of the growth was among nobles and city dwellers, and that's when the term Huguenot was first being used, while the Huguenots themselves referred to themselves as Reformed. In 1558, they organized their first national synod in Paris, and it's estimated by 1562, their number reached about 2 million, which would have made them around 10% of the population. And as they gained more political influence among the nobility and the middle class, they began to be more open about their reformed status. As such, the majority Roman Catholic population started becoming hostile towards them, and that's despite some edicts of toleration. And then after Henry II died in 1559, Francis II became king, along with the queen consort, Mary, Queen of Scots. And during his 18 months as king, Mary actively encouraged rounding up the Huguenots on the charge of heresy, putting them in front of Catholic judges, and then torturing and burning them. After he died, Mary returned back to Scotland. That was in 1561, the same year that the Edict of Orleans sought to end the persecution. The Edict of Saint Germain in 1562 actually formally recognized the Huguenots, but tensions were continuing, and that was the year that the civil wars began. Between 1562 and 1589, there were 8 civil wars, with calm periods in between, and each time, the Huguenots began to trust the Catholic throne less, and the violence would become more severe, the demands would become more grand,
and the wars continued until finally 1589. By that time, the wars had turned more into a dynastic feud between the houses of Bourbon and Guy, as opposed to a religious conflict between Catholics and Protestants. Both houses claimed the throne, and the House of Bourbon was Protestant. They were French Huguenots, while the House of Guy were Catholic. And by this time, the throne had was actually being occupied by the House of Valois, which picked whichever side was most politically expedient. These wars had started with the 1562 massacre of Vassy, when dozens or hundreds of Huguenots were killed and about 200 wounded, probably dozens. Then some Huguenots destroyed the tomb and remains of Saint Irenaeus. And a particularly violent point in the civil wars was the Saint Bartholomew's Day massacre that lasted from the 24th of August to the 3rd of October, 1572, where Catholics killed thousands of Huguenots in Paris and other towns around France. On the 23rd and 24th of August, between 2,000 and 3,000 Protestants were killed in Paris alone, and 3,000 to 7,000 in the provinces. By the 17th of September, around 25,000 Protestants had been massacred in just Paris, and the killing continued for a couple weeks more beyond that. So, easily over 100,000, probably into the few hundred thousand killed. And the next year, the king granted amnesty to the perpetrators of the massacre. What finally brought it to an end, finally brought the violence to an end, was when Henry of Navarre became Henry IV, King of France, in 1598. He was a Huguenot, but to become king, he had to recant Protestantism and become a Catholic again, which he did. And as soon as he was king, he issued the Edict of Nantes, which reaffirmed Roman Catholicism as the religion of France, but it granted Protestants equality under the throne and some religious and political freedom within the areas they controlled. In the areas that Catholics were controlled, this also discouraged Protestant churches from being built. By the 1620s, violence was definitely back, as the enforcement of the edict was pretty inconsistent. And as the government increasingly applied pressure, Huguenots increasingly fought back, mostly in southwestern France, with three more civil wars known as the Huguenot Rebellions. Those were between 1621 and 1629. Where the reformed areas, the Huguenot areas, revolted against the crown. Of course, by this time, Henry IV had died, and Louis XIII was king, but the regent, because he was a child, was his mother, Marie de Medici, who was an Italian Catholic and not tolerant of Protestants at all. In response, the Huguenots established their own political and military organizations, started opening diplomatic contacts with foreign governments, and were actively and openly revolting against the crown. And they were utterly crushed by the government. In 1643, Louis XIV became king, and he started the aggressive efforts to convert Huguenots to Catholicism. He started with sending missionaries, and then he started giving people financial rewards for converting. So start with talk, then start with the carrot, and then came the stick. There were financial penalties, they started closing Huguenot schools, they started excluding Huguenots from professions. Then they started having the military loot and occupy Huguenot homes. And in 1585, he issued the Edict of Fontainebleau, which revoked the Edict of Nantes and actually made Protestantism illegal. This forbade any Protestant services from happening. It required that all children be educated as Catholics, and it also prohibited Protestants from leaving France. Their response was hundreds of thousands of Protestants leaving France, and that included many people who were scholars, doctors, people who ran businesses, people in skilled trades, who were happily welcomed in other places. By the 1760s, there weren't very many Huguenots left among the elite, and most were peasants in the Cevennes region. And it was still illegal, but not often enforced, and it was really not much more than a nuisance for Protestants. That was also the time period when France gained more Protestants, Lutherans, when they acquired Alsace from the Treaty of Westphalia, and they did protect them. The persecution didn't fully come to an end until the Edict of Versailles, also known as the Edict of Tolerance, which Louis XVI signed in 1787, 2 years before the Declaration of the Rights of Man and Citizen of 1789, where Huguenots actually gained full citizenship. The next year, the government actively encouraged Huguenots and their descendants to return to France. Most didn't. And of course, by that time, it was the French Revolution. In the present day, there's about 1 million Protestants in France, making about 2% of the population. Most are in Alsace or Cevennes, the same places where they couldn't get rid of them. And it may be growing, but as far as the population of Protestants that identify as Huguenots, that's still pretty consistently the few hundred thousand in the Cevennes region. And next week, we're going to talk about the Huguenot diaspora, which actually has a personal connection for me, because one of my ancestors was a French Huguenot who fled to the Netherlands and then to New Amsterdam, which then became New York, where she married a descendant of my ancestor that was on the Mayflower. So, really pretty cool. If you want to contact us, you can send us an email at feedback@atheistnomads.com, or use the contact form on the website, or use the SpeakPipe button. If you want to be really adventurous, you can test out our new voicemail line for the new podcast and give me more testing for it. I am pretty excited for this one because I've gotten to do a little programming for it, and it allows me to call out on that number. Calls in go to voicemail, calls out will actually ring. I'm pretty happy with that. That number is 208-996-8667. So if you want to help me test that, that's where you can find it. If you want to support the show, you can find out how at patreon.com/atheistnomads. If you are already a patron and you want to get the jump on switching your patronage over to monthly, you can go into Patreon and update your pledge to what you want it to be for a month and set it with the monthly max to that same amount. The monthly max will get dropped when I switch it over to the whole page over to monthly. But that gets it in earlier. And until next week, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.